Hi, I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, here with John Harry Sharan, and we are going to talk about something that's fascinating to me. The title is Whispers from the Universe. But what John's going to talk about today will be the afterlife, talking about the afterlife, those who've gone on, and the afterlife communications and the mysteries of the other side. We're talking about the curtain that separates our reality from other realities and helps us get what we can from the world beyond. So, John, it's an honor to be speaking with you today. And why don't you go ahead and start us off and tell us what this is all about, the afterlife.
Well, it's good to be here again, Steve. And the afterlife, looking at it from the perspective where we are right now, is just simply this: what happens when we leave this earth, when we physically die, so to say? Some people say transition, others say pass on. The word is die. When we die, what happened? Is this the end of it? Is this all that we were here for? Did we just come to live a span of 30, 40, 50, 80, 100 years, or more or less? Or is there something else to it? And again, no one really can prove very much, so it has to do with a lot of feelings and what we think and experiences we may have had. Have we contacted anybody who has gone on? Have we seen somebody who was there, who was here and now there? And if we did, how do we know we were not imagining this, dreaming it, making it up? And when it gets right down to it, I don't think all of that really matters. It's how convinced are we within ourselves that there is something that's different. Now, from examples, I'll tell you one of them that was very interesting for me. And I base this all on examples I've had myself, and others have told me, people I trust, people I really, really believe, and they would not make something of the sort of. And this happened since I was a little guy, but my wife died when she was in her 30s. It was one of the most traumatic things for me. She had fought cancer and didn't make it. And there I was, left with two children, one of them 7 years old, and the other 11. And I had no idea what to do next, where to go, what to look forward to. And I was in this, like, sort of unable to think. That's how great that tragedy was. Actually, it was a turning point in my life. I went to sleep, and I know something about me in those days. When I'm sleeping, nothing would wake me up, even if a bomb went off, even if the world caught a fire, nothing, except for two things. One is if my wife called my name, John, I'd jump right up. Or if the kids called, if I heard their voice in my sleep, I'd be wide awake, but nothing else. So the day after she died, I was so tired, I went to bed a little later than normal, and I'm sleeping. I knew I was sleeping because I jumped right up out of my sleep. A voice said, "John," and I knew something was different. I realized that I had just heard the voice of my wife. But that couldn't be, I thought, although I was aware of these things. She died yesterday. So I got up, looked around, went to the bathroom, came back, and went back to sleep. And as I slept, I had this dream. We used to, during the good days, go to the islands, the Caribbean. We used to visit all these different places. And in this dream, we were at one of the little islands we used to visit. We were in one of those towns by the sea. And I looked around, and there was my wife. She was looking at me, but she was sort of sad. And she came up to me, and I asked her how she was doing. She said she was doing fine, and I don't remember exactly what else we said among us about this small talk, remembering now that this was a dream, but it seemed so real to me, and I was sad that she was sad. And then I looked at her, and I said, "You know, it must be a lot different where you are from where I am." And she says, "Yes, it is very different." I said, "Do you mind telling me more about it one day? I would like to write this in a book so that those who are going through a tough time like I am will understand and not feel so bad. Would you do that?" She looked at me and she said, "You know, okay, when you're ready, I'll tell you." And we started walking towards the beach, and we got to a certain spot, and she says, "This is far as we can go. I've got to go this way, and she pointed one way, and you've got to go back that way. And the minute that happened, the whole dream ended, and I woke up. And it's as brilliant in my mind today. I could actually see every detail of the place, of her face, and everything else. And that was my first contact within a day after my wife passed away. Now, some people might say, well, you know, your tired mind, your sorrow, your mind of sorrow, your grief caused you to make that up. Well, I think if I were going to make something up, I would have made up something more interesting, like, why did you go now? What are we going to do? How am I going to handle this? Or just general other talk. But we didn't do any of that.
John, that's very powerful. First of all, I'm sorry about your wife. That must have been simply devastating. And secondly, the great part of that is you now have a stronger faith in the afterlife than you probably did before, having lived through this. So was this experience actually you interacting with her spirit, or the two of your spirits interacting together?
Well, actually, we are just spirits anyway, inhabiting a body. The body is like a house. The spirits have no limitation. We, as pure spirit, have no limitation of time, space, distance, anything like that. And so it was like we, the essence of who we are, were interacting. It's like if I live in a house here, Steve, and you live in a house where you are not your house. You just have a house. I am not my house. I just have a house. And if it gets to a certain point in time to come, I could freely, or traumatically, or whichever way I want to choose, leave this house just like you could. And I could contact you in different ways. I could contact you right now, like we're doing here, recording this. Or I could do it by a letter, or I could do it by a telegram or by email. So we have that contact. Now, during that same week, to go a little further into this, I was scheduled to do an interview with Richard Bach and his wife at that time, Leslie Parrish Bach. And we had all become, good friends over the past year or two, and they followed Mardai, that was the name of my wife, Mardai's illness, and kept in touch with me about it. And I was thinking, you know, maybe we should just cancel this interview. But since it was set for quite some time before, I thought, no, we'll do this telephone interview. He was on the other side of the country and I was in the East Coast. So when the time for talking came about, he expressed his sorrow at my loss. We talked and talked, and we got to the part about the afterlife. Now, you have to remember from my previous conversations with you, when Richard Bach spoke, I listened very carefully because I think he is one of the most intriguing characters I have ever met on Earth or anywhere else. And so we got to talking about Mardai, and he said, I don't know what I would have done had I been in your shoes. And finally we got to the part about, I wonder if she's around as we talk. She was supposed to go with me, travel across the country, to sit down and do the interview with you and Leslie. But, of course, that didn't happen. I really wonder if she is around. He said to me, John, look around you. Just be quiet for a while. Look outside. She's as close to you as you're looking outside. I said, well, that's nice, and it's comforting, but, you know, it's nice out there. It was a beautiful sunshine day. And all of a sudden, I saw fluttering against the glass, against the window, and there was this beautiful giant butterfly that was trying to come in. And I said, Richard, there's this butterfly. He said, what does a butterfly mean to you? I said, a butterfly was one of my wife's favorite things. She had dresses with butterflies in them. He says, you see, this is a sign that she is around, that she hears you, and she could actually possibly even reach out and touch you. I said, oh, okay. He says, look, wherever you are, all you have got to do is become so quiet within you and do not try to do anything or be anything. Just be really quiet. And the curtain that separates these two dimensions, it is so thin that you could actually see through it. Every once in a while, you will notice as if something in the corner moves, or if there's a little bit of breeze around where there isn't supposed to be any breeze. And those are all signs to you, John, that this is what we call a world without end. Now, if other people had told me that at that time, I would have totally said, yeah, okay, you don't know what's happening. This sucks. This is terrible. I feel bad about it. But it wasn't. It was Richard Bach. And so we finished the interview, but I never, ever forgot that conversation, never forgot seeing that butterfly look like just one of those nice large butterflies that she had in a special summer dress. Now, how can I prove that this is what was happening? There's no way to prove it, but somebody once said, trying to prove the subjective experience of somebody else is like trying to find the square root of a sonnet. You can't do that. Sonnets don't have square root. It's like trying to do the impossible. So this is what I know happened to me. And for me, that's valid. And if nothing else, it was very comforting, because as years went by, there were so many other experiences of this nature, some of them profoundly helpful. And before we finish the call, I hope to give you a couple of other examples where you will notice that these could be extremely helpful things from, quote unquote, those who have gone on.
Well, John, I'd like to get to that right now, if that's okay with you, because I'm fascinated to know what the signs are. In other words, if we have relatives who have passed on, and for example, my mother passed away when I was 6 years old, if we have people who have passed on, loved ones, and they're sending us signs, it would be great to know what those signs are so we can interpret them, we can understand that, yes, this is a sign from someone on the other side. So what should we look for?
Well, they're as simple as just ordinary signs, except we've got to interpret them according to what we know and feel, not according to how sad we are about things. Here's another one. Of course, you know, too, I did mention that one of my great friends, another one of my great friends was that famous lady called Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote the book On Death and Dying, and we, for the last 10 years of her life, we were very close. We were very good friends. In fact, she wrote the introduction for one of my books called Morning Has Been All Night Coming. Now, I had visited Elizabeth quite a number of times. I was even on her board, became the vice president of the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Center. And so we talk sometimes way into the wee hours of the morning about what happens next. And she said, when I go, whichever one of us goes first, we'll let the other one know. Now, there's nothing morbid about this. But I said to her in the beginning of my knowing her, I said, you know, Elizabeth, I don't dream of my wife as often as I wanted to. After that one experience I just gave you, Steve, I didn't have another one like that for quite a while. And so I said, I haven't had any dream recently about her. And Elizabeth looked at me and said, you know, you're too heavy. The grief is so heavy that you can't see through it, and she can't get through to you. I said, oh, I thought that didn't matter. She says, no, when there's a heaviness and too much grief or anger or hurt or anything like that, whoever they are, they find it a little difficult to get through to us. We have to get to a quiet space. So talking about these signs, here is something that would make a lot of people wonder. Or take, for example, I am convinced that you have had contacts with your mom or she with you, but you never noticed, you never put it together. Okay, here I was, you know, it must have been a few weeks later, and I was finally going back to work, and I was driving home after work one afternoon, and the grief overtook me in the car, and I said, oh my gosh, you know, tears are running down my cheeks. I'm alone in the car. I'm glad nobody saw me. And I said in anguish, I said, where are you? I really, really would like to know where you are and if you're okay. That's all I did. And something made me turn on the radio. I always play those cassette tapes in those days, way before you were born, Steve. No.
We still like cassette tapes. Well,
I always listened to cassette tapes. and hardly ever turned on the radio. Something made me say, I'm tired of listening to cassette tapes. Let me turn on this radio. So I flipped the radio on, and it was on a station, and a song started playing, which was the song, one of the songs she really, really loved. It was one that she used to sing all of the time when we were married, the first year of our marriage. And the name of the song was Close to You. That's where I love to be, close to you. What was the question I asked while I had tears running down my face? I said, where are you? What was the answer in the song? I am close to you. And of course, being a scientist, I thought, out of a sad, grief-stricken mind, this is coming. So I believe in, you know, let's have a second try. A second try to confirm that this was really a message. And at the same time, there was a honking behind me. And I moved to let a car pass me. And as I looked at the license plates, it said MEH711. To many people, that meant nothing. To me, M was Marai, E Elizabeth, H Harry Turan, her initials, and 711, the date, July 11th, 711, MRE 711, two signs. Now, that would have been very easy to miss. I could have resisted the urge to turn on the radio like I would do sometimes, and now don't want to listen to anything. And when the car honked, instead of moving over nicely and letting it pass and watching, seeing what was written on the license plates, out of curiosity, I could have said, who the heck is that? What I wonder what else they got for Christmas as they're blowing that horn. And I would have missed the signs entirely. So there are signs like this. They're very, very ordinary signs. It's not like the heavens will open up and someone will come down and say, hey, John, I have the celestial letter for you from somebody who really still cares about you. You think after they leave, if they love you so much, after they leave, they stop loving you? There is a continuity. There's a continuity even in our memories. And I think we are tied to one another by one of two things. Strong hate, hatred, and strong love. If we hate something, it will never let us go until we let it go. And if we love someone or something, we are bound by ties made by pure energy, and it doesn't matter where in the universe we are, those ties can never be broken.
Well, it's very powerful. And when I think about that, I think about people who, you know, I've gotten angry with them in the past, and I kind of hold on to that, and loves that I've lost in the past. Now I hold on to that, and you're right. There's even a song by, I believe it's The Pretenders. There's a thin line between love and hate. Mm-hmm. And the energies are extremely similar.
Yeah, that's why when we are extremely angry with someone, we get to the point of, hate is a very strong word, but there's a lot of that around. Just like love is a very sweet, powerful word, and there's a lot of that around too. Sometimes we just, people become angry because I think they're looking for love in all the wrong places. But love overcomes the whole thing. It has to do with a whole bunch of intangibles and things like compassion, understanding, peace, joy, and so forth. And we can't measure those things. I don't think anybody has a joy meter or a peace meter or an understanding meter. We just have to interpret those things by feelings and interpret how we react or respond to them. So if a loved one leaves, you could actually, if you get really quiet, you could feel the contact because it never was broken. It was just as if somebody moved to another town. See, as simple as that. When I was a little boy in the village I grew up in, I keep talking about the village. It had quite an impact on my early life up to my teenage years. I lived with my parents, and we were so close, all of us. It was really, really a happy time. It was before the internet. It was a crude little village, crude in the way that we had everything we wanted. We were happy little boys and girls, and it was what little boys and girls did in that village. You know, the summertime, it was all summer, it was tropical, but we played and we enjoyed life and we celebrated the holidays like anything else. And then one day I moved to the city. I had gotten educated to a certain degree and I moved to the city to work. Now, I wasn't in my dad's home every day like I used to be as a youngster growing up. I was far away in the big city. And since the village did not have a telephone, I couldn't pick up a telephone and call him or my mom or my brothers and sisters. I could write a letter, but it took a few days for the letter to get there. But guess what? Although they couldn't see me, and I couldn't see them, and I couldn't talk to them, I knew they were there. And when a letter came, that was proof to me that they were doing okay, and every few weeks I might go, or every month, and visit them. Then another thing happened, and this one had quite an effect on me also. I'm using regular situations, Steve, to show the connection with those who have gone on or those we have loved or will always love. Time went on and I left the country to go to school overseas. Now here's the thing. Leaving, I knew it would be years before I saw my parents again. That must have been really sad. It was, I know. I lived through it. It would be really years before I saw them again. But I knew that the bond that bound them to me was as strong as ever. And although I couldn't call them on the telephone, there was no telephone there. And I couldn't see them. There was no any of the modern things that we use. Just letters, and now instead of the letters taking a few days to get there, the letters took 2 weeks to get there, and 2 weeks for an answer to come. So there was a month, but all along, I knew that they were there. I knew that they were okay, and I'd get the communications from them to say, yes, we are. Now, how is that very different, or any different, from someone who physically leaves here? I can't see them. But then again, I couldn't see my parents when I was overseas. I couldn't hear them most of the time, but then again, I couldn't hear my parents either. There was no telephone. I could get letters, and so the letters may just be in my dreams now, where all of a sudden, like that first dream I told you about, I knew there was contact. I will swear that that was as real as anything was real. I told that experience to Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and said, Elizabeth, do you think that was real? And she looked at me and she smiled and I said, it was more real than real.
Wow, that is very powerful. I love the comparison that you drew also. I think that is very powerful. Now, what about when we look at the concept of wanting to have communication? I mean, currently, in our modern day, we have so many ways to communicate with people. We have mail, which is a little faster now than it was back then.
Yes, certainly.
We have email, which is lightning fast. We have texting, also calling. We have so many ways of contacting people. Or we can just go talk to them face-to-face, fly to wherever they are in the world and see them and talk to them. But when it comes to communicating with people who have crossed over, the communication becomes a little less defined, and we know that we're not necessarily going to send a text, and we also know from what you said that we can get signs, but how about getting more of a flow in our communication? How can we communicate more freely back and forth with people who have crossed over?
Well, there's so many ways to do that, and we're going to get into an area here that people wonder about, people laugh about, people are suspicious about. There are those, and I know some of them, who are able to communicate with those who have gone on. You can call these people mediums, if you will. They seem to live in two worlds, where, take for example, one of them visited me once maybe about a year after my wife had gone on, after she had died. And this lady came in and said, you know, she had never visited my house before. She never knew much about anything about me. I hadn't even written books, I had one little book that nobody bought. And so when she came in, she says, I'm feeling the presence of a beautiful, beautiful young woman with dark hair. Who is she? And then she looked on the mantelpiece, and there was a picture of my wife and I. And she says, oh my gosh, that's the person I'm feeling and seeing around. That was your wife? I said, yeah. She said, ah, what a beautiful person. Now, what I would do with these people, I'd say, do you have any message for me from her? And to this day, I meet people who could say that. In fact, last year, I had a half an hour talk with somebody I did a big favor for, and who said, John, I'm a trance medium. I go into trance, and I could feel the presence of others. I could communicate what they're saying to you. And she said, would you like to for me to do that for you? And oh, gee, I just love that kind of stuff. If for nothing else, out of curiosity. And I always put people through little tests and so forth to make sure they're not reading my mind, to make sure they are not, now that, you know, I'm a little better known now than I used to be many years ago. So to make sure they didn't read it somewhere on the internet. Of course, there was no internet in those days. And I said, okay, tell me, do you pick up my wife? Do you get a feel? Does she have anything to say to me? And she started to tell me things that I just sat there frozen, because there would be nothing that no one else would have known. You see, you got to test these things, because there are a lot of charlatans that claim they can do this, and they make a living out of charging people who are full of grief or who want some hope. They charge them lots of money to do this. But every now and then, when you meet someone who is very, very good at it, they can, and listen to these words carefully, because they might mean different things to different people. They might be able, or they could, channel the energy and the messages from your loved ones directly to you. They serve as a translator. See, they're able, because of their energy level, to connect the two of you so that messages from one could get through this barrier where all this noise is and be directed to you, and there you have it. Whether it's 100% clear or not, I don't know. But all I know is that we do get these messages, and some of them are extremely practical.
That's very powerful, John. It's wonderful that we have the ability somehow to get in touch with other people. And as we go on, I want to learn more about how we ourselves can become receivers for information from the other side, and how we can also send that information.
Absolutely. Well, sending it is very easy. All we have to do is think it. We'll get into that shortly. We'll talk a lot more about the communications, the whispers from the universe.
Very good. I'm going to look forward to that. I'll go ahead and